Hello and welcome once again, everybody, Caps fans, other hockey fans around the world, to the Power Play Point podcast. This is, as always, the Blue Liner on Point. And as you can probably hear, I'm trying to put up a brave face given the circumstances, but probably failing. But thankfully, I am feeling much better than, say, 10 or 11 days ago when I was in the midst of, very much in the midst of a horrible, horrible cold that was doing nasty, nasty things to my respiratory system. When I find the no good SOB that gave me whatever it was that I'm still trying to get rid of in small stages, yeah, it's not going to be fun. But I would say I'm about 90% over it. And those of you that saw it, I made up for it by putting out the video before Game 6. And those who did see that video, now you know why I do mainly an audio podcast, because, yes, I have a face for radio. So I've been told. But yeah, no, it on top of all of the other obvious sadness that I had to deal with, that was not pretty, well, that was pretty damn far from pleasant. Projectiles of all shapes, sizes, and colors emanating from both my mouth and my throat and my nose. Yeah. Not fun, and having to discharge said projectiles forcefully every 10 minutes on some days. Barely being able to speak, barely being able to breathe. I don't think I would wish this on a legion of Penguins fans. Well, maybe I would. I don't know. So, okay, well, I'm very sensitive about this, and I can feel the disgust from you on the other side of the earbuds, the speakers, however you're planning on listening to this. And I understand that, but, I mean, we're talking about a nasty experience through my respiratory system, a cold that didn't feel so common to me, that was just awful. I mean, what do you want here? Shakespeare? TB or not TB, that's an infection. Whether 'tis just some globular slime you utter, wheezes and harrows of umbrageous misfortune, or to be harmed by seizing Alka-Seltzer's bubbles, and your nose is ending you. Something like that? Was it that you were looking for? I don't know. I don't know how to not be gross about telling you that I've been sick. Not that I make it an excuse, just, you know, kind of trying to relate to everybody here and perhaps failing, but that's fine. I ought to quit stalling though and just get on to really why I'm doing this. This, of course, the postmortem to the end of the season. The Washington Capitals, our beloved Washington Capitals, this, of course, being a Washington Capitals fans podcast, first and foremost. It's, if you listen to, if you're a regular listener to the What the Puck podcast that Brando Cash puts out, I highly recommend it. I think they captured the emotion of pretty much all Caps fans in that we really, really felt like the team would still be playing now. It really feels out of sorts that there is going to be no more hockey in DC until first week. Till training camp, really. And that's what, middle of September. There'll be exhibition games, I'm sure, but hockey for real won't begin anew until first week of October or so, and it just doesn't feel right. This really felt like our year, and it's tough. I wish I had a better way to describe it, but it feels like it's not right. It just didn't feel like the way it was supposed to go. And that's not entitlement. It was the way the team was playing. We all saw what happened. They were down 3-1. They were literally in the same position they were last year. Only this time, they were putting up much more of a fight. They played beautifully in games 5 and 6. They played like the team we knew and saw and came back to tie the series and brought it all the way back to a game 7. A lot of us didn't think it would come to that, but there they were. And so, okay, we all got to the point where we mustered that last bit of belief. Okay, here we are again. Things are going to change. And then for it to end the way that it did, I almost would have rather, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I almost would have rather that it just have ended in game 5 and they just die out and just, you know, given up then. I think the sting would not have been so much. The fact that they clawed their way back in and gave themselves a chance, and then just the whole thing just died with that second goal. And I'll get into that a little more, but it's just made it 1,000 times harder to take. And I don't know. I don't have any other explanation for it. It was just that hard to take. It really was. And I found myself having to get away from it for a while. At first, I, you know, dove right into all the tweets and the messages, and, you know, I don't know if I was trying to find a silver lining or an explanation or what, but I was only finding more hurt, to be honest. And then I realized that I was trying to numb myself to it, like a lot of other fans were saying they were, and I ought to be numb to it because I've been a fan of this team since 77. I've seen a lot of twists and turns. I'm not going to say I'm some sort of uber fan that's seen all the twists and turns, but I've seen a lot of them. A lot of them that one hockey team can go through in the playoffs. And this one easily, I would have to say, hurt a lot more than the Easter Epic did. I mean, I was crushed when that happened. But this, we didn't have all the expectations in 87. We did this year. We did, you know, these 30 years later. And yeah, after a while I had to just mentally get away from it. And I found myself diving into other interests. And I'll mention this towards the end, but I had to, even my most favorite podcast ever, the Puck Podcast, I had to delay listening to that for a while because I didn't think I could allow myself to sit through the criticism, what they had, however warranted, of the team. I just wanted to get away from it. But I realized that as awful as it feels, I have to do this podcast. I have to keep doing this show. If not for you guys listening out there, at least for me. Because if I hold this in, it's not going to be good. So pardon me while I struggle through all of this, struggle through a lot of emotions and believe me, it's not, I understand that there is much, much more to life than following one hockey team. I get that. And believe me, there are a lot of issues in my life that I'm grappling with. Now, I'm not going to bore you with the details of, one of which was, you know, what I told you about my health. You know, I did that to try and get a laugh out of everybody. I think we can use a laugh right about now. I did that to try and, you know, elicit something, you know, something of a belly laugh out of you loyal listeners. You are nice enough to listen to me rant through this thing. But I mean, my belief is that you don't lay your troubles on everybody. You just don't do that. You get through them on your own as best as you can. And that's what I'm trying to do here. And you guys are just indulging me by listening to this. Oh, ye few but faithful. And, I do appreciate that. And I'm going to mention some very special people towards the end. So, I'm just going to wing it. I will say that, like I said, I did dive into as much information as I could. I did do some research. I did send out some tweets and messages. I did send out a Facebook post after game 4 when they went down 3-1 to something the effect of season felt like a total waste, because I thought for sure they were going to lose game 5, but they didn't. So I learned the lesson that, like Ed Frankovic, you don't evaluate, you don't say anything, you let the emotions die down, and you let the logic take over. And that's what I decided to do. So I have gone over this thing 76,453 times in my head and tried to find some sort of reasoning, something that I could grasp onto and say, okay, this is why it happened, and this is what can be done to correct it. And I don't think I found it, and I have a bad feeling that the team's management will never find it, whatever this is, unless certain elements go away or are changed completely. And we'll go get into that in a little bit here. But I just wanted to explain that that's been my thought process on this ever since the loss in game 7. But I also feel like you have to throw in at least some emotion, because that's our point of view as fans, is to express our feelings for the team. And so, and the Caps are no different. Capitals are no different. We Caps fans are no different as far as that goes. I'd like to think we didn't feel that sense of entitlement, but instead we just felt like this was a good enough team to go at least far enough to make a decent showing. I don't know that I would have been satisfied with an appearance in the conference final, but it would have been a start. But again, I will try to get through this using the best combination of logic and emotion that I can come up with. And I just want to apologize to you if this is going to sound like rambling for, I may go on for at least an hour. So I just want to apologize to you if you're listening, if this isn't my most coherent, isn't my most best, isn't my best work or anything like that. I'm not going to stand here and give a rah-rah speech. The time for that's over. It's just time to look at the team, see what we've got, see what happened, try to learn for it and from it, and find out the best way to move on. And that's what it's all about. So I'm going to just go right into that now. I dove right into as many fan and media sources as I could. I'll give you some examples. Of course, Ed Frankovic, I have long admired his articles. I think his take on, what happened during games is spot on, and what his point of view and his evaluations of the team are always succinct and insightful. And he's been watching the team for many, many years, since pretty much as long as I have, since the early 80s. And so people like him, RNMB, Russian Machine, Never Breaks. It's Ian Olin's blog. Of course, that's Focus on Alex Ovechkin. The What the Puck podcast I mentioned before. Brando Cash is the host of that. CSN Washington, Washington Post, Isabel Kershudian. So people both in the media and in the, I don't want to call it the blogosphere, but the fan base that puts out as informed an opinion, of course, Japers Rink as well, although I tend not to rely on them too much, because I don't 100% agree with their approach, but they certainly have a wealth of useful information. I won't argue that. I just don't agree with their approach all of the time, but they're certainly a leading portion of the Caps fan base, and well informed. There's not an aspect of the game that they don't have covered in some way. So I've looked at all that, and I've looked at outsiders' observations, mainly the Puck podcast. Those two guys I mentioned before, Doug Stolhan, Eddie Garcia, those two guys also astutely cover the game as a whole. Pardon me. And they listened to their take recently on what happened as well. And I'm still trying to process it. I'm still not sure. So I've taken all of that information into account. So let's go back to where it all started, which was Game 7. Now, I'm referring to the What the Puck podcast here. I think they have the best explanation, I think, so far as to what went on during that game. The first 10 minutes, like they said, the first 10 minutes, great. They attacked the net. They were tilting the ice on the other end. It was just a matter of the puck going in, but you felt like sooner or later it was gonna. And then, so no score in the first period. Second period, Pittsburgh takes advantage of just the briefest of a slight defensive lapse, and Rust gets that first goal. And I don't know if that's the one, or that's one that Holtby should have had, or if there was more the second one that he should have had. But otherwise, I think Holtby was playing about as well as he could play. And I don't think he had a horrible game by any stretch. I don't even think he had a bad game. I think he played, I would say, to 99% capability. But in a game 7, you have to bring your A+ game. So, I mean, you could make the argument that he came up short, but the real culprit was the fact that the second goal was the one that killed the momentum, obviously. And you don't, when you're playing in a game 7, when you are playing in a game 7, you have to know that it is all on the line, and it especially against a team that you historically have had not much, if any, success at all, at least not in recent history. Okay. And I'm hearing the calls of, well, let go of the history. This year's different. Yes. You have to make it different, though. And look, when your captain moves up the boards and fails to make a simple clearing outlet, And yes, he made it. He may have had an excuse, and I'm going to get to that. Believe me, I know I'm going to get to that. But when the captain of your team is responsible, at least in some part, for giving up a goal that puts your team in a two-goal hole with a good amount of time remaining, but in the last period of what could turn out to be the last game of the season, I mean, I don't know. I'm sure everybody who was watching the game probably felt it. I can't speak for you all, but I know everything. I mean, it was as if you were watching I can't describe it. It was as if you're watching an airplane that said Washington Capitals on it, and somebody shot it right out of the sky. And it crashed and burned. I don't know how else to describe it. It was just, I've never, ever felt as bad for this team as I did for that moment. And I never felt so much just, I don't know. I don't know if there's a word for it, but I had never felt so down about that team as I did in that moment. And of course, NBC did everything they possibly could to highlight the fact that, yes, it was Ovechkin's fault. Of course they would. But you had to understand that they, however of an element you think they might have to saying, well, we don't like Ovechkin, they were also showing the truth. Replays don't lie. He had one thing he had to do, and that was clear the puck out of the zone. And he didn't do it. And yes, it might be unfair to place the blame squarely on him. Certainly, there were other opportunities to win not only the series, but that particular game, of course. But, and I've said this before, you're making millions upon millions of dollars. It comes down to a simple play. You've got to make that play. And I don't know. I don't want to put it all on Ovechkin's shoulders because, frankly, he doesn't deserve it. And as it turns out, yes, he was hurt. He was playing very hurt. And I will mention a tweet that Ed Frankovic put out a day later. Painkillers, and Ovechkin was on painkillers, do tend to cloud the mind, especially the longer that you're on them. And that's true. I've been on painkillers. They mess up your mind, but good. And he suffered a lapse of concentration that was for a split second, but that was enough. That was enough to sink the efforts. And I don't want to sound like I'm blaming him again, but, and this is why I mentioned these other sources, but as Doug Stolhan tends to say a lot in these scenarios on the Puck podcast, if you are, despite any injury you're working through, if you are well enough to at least play, if you are on the ice, then guess what? You're still accountable for your actions. You still are expected to produce. Now, would they have been better without him? I don't know. It's hard to say. It would not have, I don't know. I don't know that they would have. I think they still would have come back against Toronto. I don't know what kind of a series. I don't know if it would have changed anything or not. I'm just not sure. I think the responsible thing, if he was that hurt, though, I think the responsible thing that would have been done, though, should have been done, was to sit him at least for a game. If he was that hurt, let him finish the game he was hurt in, but sit him for the next game at least so he can rest. I know how badly he wants to play, and I do give him credit for saying, hey, you know what? I gave it my all, but I'm not going to go to the World Championships. I give him credit for that. But I don't want to beat the drum of it's all Ovi's fault. I don't want to do that. I'm just saying that he's going to automatically draw most of the attention because it is to his team. He is the captain. He is the marquee player easily. So naturally, the focus is going to gravitate to him. But for that one split second, yes, you could make the argument that he cost the Capitals what could have been a better result. So, but I don't want to spend too much time on that. Like I said, there were other reasons why they ended up losing that series. Had they not sleepwalked through game four, had they just made more of an effort? And Ovechkin himself even said, no urgency. There was no urgency. He admitted. I give him props for admitting that, but again, it's a game seven. Why is there no urgency? Why? How can you not have any urgency? You've made this much of an effort to win two games. You know that if you win one more, you put the demons to rest. You shut everybody up for at least a year. And you don't get it done. And look, folks, that's the reality that we all have to live with. I hate to be that guy, but this team just did not get it done. And I'm going to expand on that later. But that's why this hurts more than most. This team was the one that's supposed to get it done. They didn't get it done. Didn't happen. More hindsight. The Kevin Shattenkirk trade, did that help the team? Was that supposed to at least help the team? If you add everything up, it was a zero-sum game because he did look very good at times during the regular season. But I go back to this. I thought he just was trying way too hard. He felt like he had to do more than what he had to do other than just simply play his game. And that was to the detriment of the Capitals' fortunes. So that played a factor. Now, there's also been a dialogue that's been started on as to whether or not Coach Barry Trotz should be fired. At first, when I heard it, I thought, how ridiculous. And then I thought more about it. And, well, I mean, if you're gonna hang the label, if you're gonna hang, you know, you're gonna, we all remember what I think it was, 2014 was Adam Oates' last year as a coach, and they threw up that stinker of a game in yet another game seven, and the team just did not look prepared. If you're going to hang that on Oates, I think it's fair. It's only fair that you scrutinize Trotz and how he prepped the team. Now, it looked to be a stroke of genius, at least at first. The flipping of the wings, putting Ovechkin on the third line, Burakovsky on the first. More on Burakovsky later. But the way, If Ovechkin says there's no urgency, well, then you have to wonder, what was Barry Trotz doing to prepare the team? Because there sure was a hell of a lot of urgency, it looked like, in the first 10 minutes of the game. It sure as hell looked like they were trying to put them away. And then that just kind of died down. So you have to wonder, what did he do? What did the coaching staff do to help prepare this team? Or did they just back off? And I don't know. I don't know. And you have to look at Barry Trotz's career, and you still have to, one of the first things you have to notice is that the fact that he's never been past the second round of the playoffs ever in his coaching career. And he's now had, I forget who pointed this out. It was another Caps fan. I'm sorry. I forget who they are. It's in a tweet I saw, but they pointed out that now Barry Trotz has had two President's Trophy winning teams in back-to-back years and could not get them past the second round. And sooner or later, you got to wonder, how much of a role, how much do you put this on the coaches? Now, you have to, you understand that these are grown men. These players are all grown men that should understand their responsibility, that they're not only being paid to play, but they're being paid to put out their best effort at all times. And if they don't, there are consequences. But the part of the coach's job is to remind them of that should that part of their mindset fail. So it's on the players and it's also on the coaches. So they're equally to blame as far as the mental aspect of it. Speaking of which, Matt Niskanen made an interesting comment that he was asked point blank, I think by Isabel Kershutian, is there something mental? Is there something with this team that's acts as a mental block? And he said flat out, yes, no filter. He laid it out. Yes, there is something wrong. There is a mental block with this team somewhere, somehow. And I can speak to that. And it was Ian Olin that said, well, you need to let go of the history. I don't know if I agree with that. You have to understand the history, but you also have to be able to look past it. You have to understand what's in front of you and what the goal is. And whether it's squeezing the stick too tight or just putting too much pressure on yourself, at the end of the day, you have to just play your game. And well, it worked in games 5 and 6. I'm still struggling with understanding what happened in game 7. And I don't think we'll ever figure that out. Now, I've just been reminded of an aspect of the team that, well, of course, we didn't get to find out in full and in any detail until, of course, after it all ended. And that was all of the injuries. We find out, of course, Ovechkin's injury. That was painfully obvious, pardon the pun. And we also come to find out that Marcus Johansson played with a broken finger. And that, you know, should have seen that coming, because if you notice towards the end of the series, he was less and less effective. He wasn't getting his chances. You know, that kind of affects the things that he does well. and that's crashing the net and digging the puck out of the boards. So that kind of minimized his game. And then, of course, you throw in the fact that Carl Alzner probably wasn't 100% the whole playoff season at all. And there might have been other bumps and bruises among the rest of the guys that we may not have heard about yet. But again, not an excuse. You're on the ice, then you're accountable. You're well enough to play, then you are accountable. So I wanted to make mention of all of that before I went to my next item that I wanted to throw out there. I said I didn't want to, be the standard bearer for the blame Ovi camp. But not long after the game ended, I told you I drowned myself in tweets and Facebook posts. And I found one tweet very interesting from a gentleman that you folks out there might be familiar with, and that's Slava Malamud. He is a Russian reporter, Russian hockey writer, who has been covering Alex Ovechkin's career literally since day one. And he did not have anything kind to say about either Alex Ovechkin nor the team culture as a whole. I'm not going to read the whole. He went on a rant that lasted 18 tweets, if you can imagine that. And so if you've seen that already, then you know what he said. But I would highly recommend searching him. If you don't follow him already, search him and go back to about 5 days ago, and you'll see a very interesting, long-ranted tweet that he put out. I'm just going to summarize it. Basically, what he said was that the problem, the true problem with the team, is the fact that owner Ted Leonsis has centered the culture, the fortunes, everything about the team around Alex Ovechkin, and that you should do to an extent because, as I mentioned before, he is your marquee player. But what he goes on to say is that what's wrong with that is that the culture is built around him not to win championships, but to sell t-shirts and tickets and jerseys and all kinds of other, all manner of other souvenirs with his name on it. The goal is to raise the value of the team. And I will not argue that point because I remember the day that Ted Leonsis bought the team. That was one of the things he said when he bought the team. He said, I want value from this team. That's no lie. What Malamud is saying is not a lie. He wants value from this team. How do you do that? Then you raise the profile. You sell merchandise. The goal isn't to win. Well, maybe the culture ought to change then. Maybe that's contributing to this mental block that Matt Niskanen mentioned. And I want to mention something else that a well-respected Canadian reporter, Elliot Friedman, mentioned. 2014, apparently there was some unspoken rant by several unnamed Caps players about how the fortunes of the team, about Ovechkin's leadership then. Didn't get any details, so to me it's unsubstantiated. But again, when are we gonna finally explore the fact that the same formula has been followed, the same thing has been tried? Well, maybe not the same thing, but a lot of different things have been tried. What has been the one constant of the team? And I hate to agree with what a guy I consider a scumbag in Larry Brooks, but he put out something of that in a, you know, something like that in a recent tweet as well. So we're now going to segue to what should be done. What should be done with this team? What is the direction they need to go? Well, let's, before we get into the players, let's start with the coaching staff, because that will take a little less time. Barry Trotz has 1 year left on his contract. This is the last year. I'll be honest, I don't really see, short of a miracle in the playoffs, I don't see them renewing that contract. I think they're going to decide to go in another direction. They may even decide to start the rebuild in earnest at that point and just go with a younger, less experienced coach to kind of start that process. So whether or not they fire him, to me, is moot, because he's got 1 year left on a contract that, with a team that may or may not go anywhere. And in fact, if they do poorly enough, he may even be let go before the season's out. So while I don't 100% agree with firing him being the best choice, because I don't know that there are a lot of better coaching choices out there. And if there is a better coaching choice as a coach, then it ought to be somebody that knows how to win. It ought to be somebody that knows what it takes to get through the playoffs. I don't really see a whole lot of people out there. You know, probably the best person that would have been that type of candidate was Ken Hitchcock, and he's already signed with the Dallas Stars. You might go the direction of Mike Keenan, and he certainly has experience with Russian players, but I don't think that's a good choice either. And that's really all I can think of that has Stanley Cup winning experience that might have been available. So that firing Trotz really doesn't make a whole lot of sense, mainly due to his contract situation, but also due to the fact that there's really nobody better out there right now. Now, speaking of the coaching staff in general, well, that's probably going to change regardless. Apparently, Todd Reirden has already lined up an interview with the Florida Panthers and has to be considered a leading candidate for that job. Lane Lambert interviewed with the Colorado Avalanche last year, and I can't see them sticking with that coach that they hired. So that job might open up. We don't know. But it's possible he will end up somewhere else as well, whether it's with a pro team or with the AHL, an AHL team. We're not sure yet. But the makeup of the coaching staff as we know it is probably going to change. There's a very good chance of that, I would say. But again, I don't think firing Trotz is the way to go, because it would represent, it's not the right direction. I know what I said before, and I think he did fail to an extent to prep the team. I also think, I did mention this on a previous episode, I think he should have made sure the power play was tweaked, and it could have been better, and it wasn't. And they went in with the same mentality on the power play, and it didn't work. So I think he's also bears some responsibility for that, but I don't think he did such a horrible job that he needs to be let go. And again, that coupled with the fact that there really isn't anyone better that can be an instant hire that can step in and do better with this team, I don't think there's anyone out there. So it really, to me, doesn't make much sense to go that direction. Now, as far as the players go, well, again, not going to have much choice there either, because it was Brando Cash on the What the Puck podcast that said, I think he counted in total, whether they were unrestricted or restricted free agents, I think he counted 11 free agents 11 guys whose contract will expire July the 1st that either need to be re-signed or going to walk for nothing. The most prominent, of course, being TJ Oshie. And Brando also made the point that the Caps strategy, the management strategy, should be or seems to be making re-signing Oshie the centerpiece. And I don't disagree with that. He tied Ovechkin for the team lead in goals. I think he will eclipse him if he stays this season. I think that's going to be an inevitability. And if not him, no, Kuznetsov really is more of a setup man, more of a playmaker, but he can score goals. But I think you definitely make your strategy keeping Oshie and definitely Kuznetsov, who is a restricted free agent. So now that's a gamble in and of itself. Now, if you let Kuznetsov walk, you do get compensated with draft picks. So the question is, you spent a first round draft pick to get this guy. You had to wait a few years before he played, I'm citing the What the Puck podcast, the guys on there said Kuznetsov is only going to get better. And that's true. He is only going to get better. He had a much better playoffs. He was darn near non-existent last year. He had a lot better time in the playoffs. I think he understands what is required of him in the postseason. And so I think that definitely shows that he's worth keeping. And the problem is that the both of them are due significant raises. Oshie had a career year easily. Kuznetsov is, I don't know that he had a career year, but again, had a much better showing in the playoffs and will only improve over time. And possibly can be had for a 5 or 6 year deal in the range of hopefully not more than the same amount, 5 to 6 million. But then what do you pay Oshie? And the fact that Oshie likes it here might help. He might be willing to take something of a hometown discount, but hard to say. Now the rest of the guys, I'm sorry for repeating myself, but I really think the best evaluation was by the What the Puck podcast. I'll go over it as best I can. Basically, what they said was that Carl Alsner was this year's Brooks Like, in that they rode him as much as they could, but now he's been hit back-to-back playoff years with a bad injury that hampered his game. And he's just not as useful and as effective as he is anymore. And so you kind of have to let him walk, because he's just, as much as it hurts, as much as we all like the guy, you know, you gotta do what's best for the team and let the guy walk. I would be very surprised if he is re-signed. Very surprised. I can't see them keeping him. They also made mention that there's a couple of young prospects, defensive wise, Madison Bowie being one of them, who just recently scored a winning goal in the playoffs for the Bears, a game-winning OT goal. I think he's going to get a look. So the fact that he's just about ready for the parent club makes at least one or two defensemen expendable. And so the other one, well, all right. And I think we would all like to see, and they made mention of it, the guys at WTP, we would all like to see Brooks Orpik go bye-bye forever. him in that contract, and I don't disagree with that. He looked two steps slow in the playoffs. He looked out of place. He just he doesn't cut it anymore. And I like his game, but he can't keep up anymore. And his game's only going to decline. It's not going to get better. So there's no point in keeping him. But he's got that ridiculous contract. We're stuck with the guy for another 4 years. So I don't know. I don't know how you move him. Nobody's going to want him. Not with that contract, but you know, I think they made mention of hoping and praying that, you know, the Vegas Golden Knights pick him up in the expansion draft, leave him exposed. I don't see that happening. But leave him exposed anyway. What the hell? You never know. Niskanen, he's still under contract, I'm pretty sure. So you definitely protect him in the expansion draft. Carlson, of course, is a keeper. Regardless, and in fact, even the Puck podcast mentioned him as the quote-unquote future core, should the management team decide to blow it up, as it were. They mentioned him, Burakovsky, and I believe Backstrom as the core that they should keep. No, they didn't say Backstrom. They said Kuznetsov because he's younger. And he's also a center. Backstrom could, if you trade him, now he's got kind of a hefty contract too, but he could probably fetch you some, and this is the other problem facing the team. They're kind of down on draft picks for the next year or so. So now, and this, now this year coming up ain't that great a draft, to be sure. You want to look towards next year and beyond, but you know, you're moving guys up from Hershey. So you got to restock the farm system. And the way to do that is through your second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth round picks. Hope you find a gem maybe there. But I mean, as much as I would hate to see it, as long as the price is right, in that we get real high draft picks or a quality second line center or quality defenseman, if trading Backstrom fetches that, I think I wouldn't be opposed to that. It's unfathomable to some of you listening. I understand that. But again, the focus here is on improving the team, and let's face it, this group isn't getting it done. You know, you have the saying, insanity is defined as trying the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Well, he's been there all these years too. He was there in 2010 too. And now he's given his best, to be sure, but I don't know. I'm not opposed to keeping him, but I'm not opposed to dealing him if the price is right. If the return betters the team in the immediate and then the long-term plans. If you can't get a decent return, then don't trade him. Then let him ride out his contract. Daniel Winnick, I believe, is also another free agent. Unfortunately, I think they're going to have to let him go, even though I really like his game. I think he did an outstanding job on the PK. I think the PK was probably the brightest spot in the whole playoffs. And I kind of hate to see him go because he's been bounced around a lot. And, you know, he's really into the team. He's done a lot, done everything that was asked of him, but I can't see him staying unless he's willing to take something of a discount. Sign a very, you know, low, he's at, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think he's at $2.25 million now. I don't see him re-signing for that. He's going to have to take a pay cut if he wants to stay. If he wants to make anything of what he's been making, he's going to have to test the open market. So he's going to have to figure out what he wants. But if he, I'm sure that he goes to management and says, okay, I want to stay. I will take upwards of at least of a 33% pay cut. I think they'd be willing to listen. Speaking of fourth liners, Brett Connolly, also a UFA. Yeah, he's gone. He's gone. It that's kind of obvious. He was a healthy scratch, in pretty much most of the playoffs. He had a pretty good comeback season for him, but I think it's time for him to move on, and get another opportunity elsewhere. I think he's proven his use in being, putting in quality minutes as a third or fourth line forward, but not with this team, not anymore. I think they need, there's a need for someone younger to fill that void. And then the WT folk, the What the Puck folks, mentioned, Jacob Vrana as a possible replacement. And that's certainly viable. Kevin Shattenkirk. I mentioned him before, and the return for him was zero sum. He looked good in flashes at the regular season. He obviously had that game-winning goal against the Penguins, but he looked really, really bad, and I don't really think he fits in the long-term plans. And his cap hit is $4.2 million right now. So even if they re-signed him for that amount, that's too much damage. That's money you could be throwing at Oshie or Kuznetsov. Justin Williams. I really, really wish they could keep him, but at $3.25 million, no. He's going to fall victim to the Joel Ward syndrome. If they had more guys like him on the team, I think they could have pushed themselves a bit harder. They need more people like him with his attitude, I think. And yeah, he didn't make the difference in game 7 like we hoped, but you can't hang that all on him. Not when the rest of the team just kind of shoots itself in the foot. So, but I really would have liked for him to stay, but I think he's not, I'm pretty sure he's not going to. Other free agents of a minor effect that I'll just mention briefly. Phoenix Copley, goalie we got back in the Shattenkirk trade. Paul Carey, who saw a little bit of time with the big club. Stan Galiev. Galiev, I think that experiment should end. Held on to the guy for 4 years now. If he's not ready for the big club now, just let him go. Or just let him languish in the minors. Christian Thomas, don't know a whole lot about him, unfortunately. And Chris Bork, son of Raymond. Chris, I think, ought to have some chances to come up with the big club. I think he's worth a look, at least in the first 10 games of next season. So I think he's worth a re-sign. Give him a two-way deal. Tom Gilbert, a mill? Really? No. Let him go. So out of those guys, I would say definitely keep Copley, who unfortunately just had that injury recently, but, he's doing pretty great. Unfortunately, I don't know that he's ever going to get a chance with the big club. But then again, like Backstrom, Holtby is under contract. But again, if the goal is to better the team somehow, through a trade, through gaining resources you ain't got now, through what someone who has been considered a Vezina caliber goalie for the last 2 years, then maybe you pull the trigger on that. And he can be had for a decent price right now. His cap hit, I believe, is $5 or $6 million. So that's a fair to middling price for an elite goalie. You compare that to a contract like Henrik Lundqvist, I think he's getting like $9 million, $8 or $9 million. So if Brian McClellan is willing to entertain that offer and he can get a good return, that might be yet another option that he pulls the trigger on. You know, nothing. Look, and I realize that there are names I'm throwing out there that for a lot of you folks, should be out of bounds. And I get that Backstrom is one and Holtby is another, and certainly Ovechkin is another. I'll get to him in a second. But again, the goal is to better the team. The goal is to rebuild the team, rebuild a team that is capable of winning in the playoffs. And the squad that they have now, it is painfully obvious that they can't do it for whatever reason. And yes, I understand that the FAs, a lot of FAs are going to walk, so the team's going to be different regardless. But if you've got pieces that you can move for guys that can contribute towards a winning team, then you do it. And the thing to admire about Brian McClellan is that he's not afraid to do it. So you can't hold on to a whole lot of sentimentality and just keep hoping for the best. Not when you've got aging players that are floating past their prime. You know, they're just sailing past their prime right now, and it's not, you're not going to get the same production out of them. You have to look at it that way. Is it going to sting if we lose them? Yes, of course it is. But not nearly as much as a season where they were supposed to win the cup and they didn't even get halfway there. I'm sure you all follow my logic there. Now, so we've come down to the big one, and that's Alex Ovechkin. And so, yes, he's got a no-move clause, obviously. So, but he can be asked to waive that. He can be either bought out or traded. So do you do that if you are Brian McClellan? And again, it's going to have to come down to whatever it is he can get. And well, the reality of it all is that a trade is not likely. Because, like I said, number one, you have to get him to agree to waive the no-move clause. I don't think he's going to do that. So the only other option left is a buyout. And while it's going to be expensive as hell to put out, obviously, that much money all in one go, you do get the reward of freeing up two-thirds of that cap space. So, and that you can put towards an Oshie, a Kuznetsov, a quality number two forward, number two line forward, a quality defenseman, a battle-tested defenseman, a young, talented defenseman. Pardon me. Again, you can't be overly sentimental yet. Will losing him sting? Yes, of course it will. That's 10 great years you would be literally throwing away. One of the proudest moments being when he scored his 500th goal. I think that moment among a lot of others. And of course what he's done for the team. But when the goal is to win a Stanley Cup, and it hasn't been done in 43 years with the Washington Capitals, you gotta start making moves. And you know the pieces you've got aren't gonna get you there. You gotta start making the moves. You either gotta go with what you got and then know and resign yourself to the fate of status quo. Come on, guys. Is that what we want every single year? To run into a brick wall in the second round? Is that what you want? I know it's not what I want. Just to have the pleasure of seeing the same guys try and fail? I mean, come on. I love these guys. I love every single one of them. I wish they could all stay. But I also know that because I just watched them try and fail, I know they're not going to win. They're not going to win anything more than a President's Trophy. And I'm sick of winning the President's Trophy. I want a Stanley Cup. I think we should all start to feel that way. I think that's part of the mental block that Matt Niskanen mentioned. I think the attitude, the culture, the overall attitude needs to change. I'm sick and tired of winning the President's Trophy. I'm sick and tired of regular season success. I'm sick and tired of the same players nominated for regular season individual awards that don't mean jack. Sooner or later, you can't be willing to just settle for that. And it's a hallmark of a team that wants more, that gets more. And that's why, it's my rationale for hypothetically posing these deals. Doesn't mean I want very badly to get rid of them or that I'm fickle and I'm in a what have you done for me lately mode. No. I appreciate what these guys have done, but again, if you can move these pieces and improve the team in the long and the short term, you got to do it. And we've all got to get into that mentality. So I think it's going to be very interesting. Brian McClellan has delayed his assessment of the team. We heard from Ted Leonsis, optimistic, usual optimistic yet vague. The team will be different, blah, blah, blah. No kidding. Thanks, Uncle Ted. Yeah, we know they'll be different. You got almost a dozen free agents, most of whom, if not all of whom, are going to walk. So, yeah, the team's going to be different, obviously. But I'm saying there's deals that can be made, and if any of them benefits the team, it's got to be done, and it will be done. I think McClellan will not hesitate. If in his assessment it makes the team better, makes the team something of a cup contender, which honestly, I don't think they will be or should be next year. I think there ought to be considered underdogs, and it's a role that they've relished and thrived in. Now, I would rather they be in that role. I don't know where they're going to end up in the Metro Division. Carolina's only getting better. They've just recently shored up their goaltending or trying to. I don't know if Columbus will be the same, but I'm sure they'll be tough. The Rangers are always tough. I don't see them going backwards. And of course, Pittsburgh, if they can stay healthy, even if they can't stay healthy, obviously, I think they're always going to be a tough draw. So right there's four teams right now that are a threat, and they've got to get past at least two of them. I'm not 100% sure they're going to do it, and really depends on what their lineup's going to be. So that in and of itself poses a question mark. But that all in summary is, I mean, obviously just conjecture, just a theory as to what could be done with this team. And again, I'm sorry if I threw out some names that I said should have gotten rid of, but it's only in the interest of improving the team. And I love all these guys. Again, I wish they could all stay. But if they all stay, we can resign ourselves to another year of what we just sat and watched. And I know you don't want that. So when you get in a situation like this, and you know you got to deal with something really, really bad that you don't want to deal with, the thing to do is to find the positive as much as you can. Find the silver lining. If there is a silver lining, and there is, It's the fact that our younger guys in both minor clubs, the Stingrays and the Bears, are doing pretty well for themselves. The Stingrays, I think they're in the final for the Kelly Cup in the ECHL, if I'm not mistaken. And the Bears, I mentioned before, Madison Bowie, his overtime winning goal gave them a 3-2 series lead against the Providence Bruins. And they're one step away from the Calder Cup final, I'm pretty sure. But the kids down there are at the very least worth a look. You got Lucas Johansson coming up. I think he's going to merit a shot, a full-time roster spot on the Bears. So he's going to get more seasoning. I think he's going to be a elite defenseman in the mold of, I would say, a John Carlson, if not a Matt Niskanen, in the years to come. Nathan Walker, his shot with the parent club is long overdue. I get that you don't want to put him up too much against some of these clubs because of his size, but I think he's worth a look. Again, in, like Chris Bork, within the first 10 games of the season, give him a shot. I think his enthusiasm for the game will be infectious. So there's also Christian Juice, son of Pear, coming up. And he's putting in quality minutes as a defenseman for the Bears. I think he might also be worth a look. So there's some younger guys that are, and I also mentioned Jacob Vrana. He could fill a missing forward spot due to free agency. So there are some quality younger guys that can step in and certainly play for cheap that can might be able to do something. Just let them, you know, show what they can do. And Burakovsky, I think, is only going to get better. Kuznetsov is obviously only going to get better. I think you follow the model of some of these teams that have been winning consistently, and you go for younger, cheaper players that just need a little more seasoning. So if there's a silver lining, it's that. There's already some guys in the system that could be ready to step in and make their mark. Now, I was debating going off topic here, but it's my show, it's my podcast, I'm going to say it anyway. I've mentioned before there I have dealt with some Penguins fans that do have a brain and a heart, and this is not meant at them, but this is meant at, I would think, the core that allow themselves to believe the idiotic reporting, the rhetoric that went on during this series. I mentioned it before. But my message to them is this. How can you root for a team that routinely flouts league protocol and rules all of the time and obviously has no respect for the right way for things to be done? And, of course, I'm talking about two main things. First being the Nick Bonino embellishment that should have been called, should have been at least addressed somehow, and they still have that rule in place. Obviously, PK Subban was just fined $2,000 for what he allegedly did. But I mean, guy pretends to take a stick to the face to the point where he whips his head back and fools the official into getting that penalty called. I'm sorry, that's a disgrace to the game. It is. Barry Trotz is 100% right about that. It is a disgrace to the game. They look like flippin' soccer players out there. They look like actors. That is not the way the game should be played. That is embarrassing. And no other word for it. That's a disgrace. And Nick Bonino ought to be ashamed of himself. I know he won't care, and he'll think that this is, he did right by his team. But I mean, do you really want to win that way? You want to win by embarrassing yourself? You think winning is worth that? Well, good luck, but no integrity, none? Come on. And even worse though, the fact that the team flouted the current concussion protocol, if there is even one left. Now the league is a bit to blame for this, but, how do you have your marquee player, your number one guy, your franchise player, how do you witness him sliding into the boards head first? Boards that have no give at all, with a guy that has an extensive history of neck and head injuries. How do you let a guy do that and not give more than the cursory inspection by the team doctor he said he was given? And then your coach say, flat out say, oh no, he wasn't examined at all. And it turns out he was telling the truth. The coach, what it was, the team doctor was basically like, Sid, you okay? Yeah, I'm all right. No problem. Okay, good, done. And like they said on the Puck podcast, I understand that you don't necessarily want to expose him to the concussion protocol because you risk losing him at least for a while. But I mean, if you're a team with integrity and you care about your guy, you love this guy, then you watch out for him. And again, how do you root for a team that just winning means more than the guy's long-term health? You know, and it just, that just bothers the heck out of me. And if we hear awful stories later in life that, you know, he wakes up and doesn't know what room he's in, doesn't know the food that's in front of his plate, well, don't be surprised. And Pittsburgh fans will have only themselves to blame, I think. That's just my opinion. So I've reached the end of my rant. I'm sure I have more things I can talk about that I can put out there. They're not coming to my mind right now. I've gone on for upwards of 80 minutes, to the detriment of, my family here. I'm getting sideways looks from, Mrs. Blue Liner. So I gotta wrap it up here. I want to end the show. I want to end this episode by, with two key points here. And that's if this season has been worth anything, and again, I'm working on finding the silver lining. A definite silver lining for me was connecting and in some cases reconnecting with you, my fellow Caps fans out there. I have never, felt closer to a group. Now, I am by nature a loner. I've been in way too many groups where it ended up being five people going one way, three going another, and it just ends in disaster. So I've never, and I pride myself on my individuality. That's probably why I don't get more than 20 downloads in an episode, but that's neither here nor there. But I pride myself on that. Hence my hashtag, my Twitter hashtag, free agent Caps fan. So I've resolved myself to not being a part of any major Caps fan group. Well, But that being said, I feel a lot closer to a lot of the people I've had the pleasure and privilege to meet and get to know over the course of this past season. And if there's one good thing above and beyond the winning, the highlights, and everything, the highs and the lows with this team, it's those people. It's you people. And I mean, I feel a little silly saying it's you guys that make the show go when this is the littlest of little podcasts. I'm not ashamed to admit. I don't do this. I mean, I would like, I'm not ashamed to put myself out there and try to make more money. You know, I'm not stupid. I'm a capitalist at heart. But if I don't and I fall on my face, no big deal. But that's not why I do this. I do this, as I've mentioned many times, to put myself out there as a form of therapy and because I love this team. And a lot of you out there share that love, and I can't thank you enough for you that support this episode and you that support this podcast and you that support other podcasts that are Washington Capitals fan base and that support the team in general. Whether or not it's on my show or not, it doesn't really matter. We're all, I would like to think, part of one big family. So I would like to take this time to, and I'm going to apologize beforehand if I forget anyone, but to thank all of you that have been the most responsive. I'm going to start with some old friends of mine that I went to school with, Doug Lucerarian, Pete Fisher, my old friend from school that I've mentioned many times. Just want to clarify, Pete's definitely more of a Caps fan than a Coyotes fan, even though he's out in Tempe right now. Those guys, Ronnie Schrantz, also went to school with him. He's up in Baston right now, but, grew up a Caps fan. My old friends, and my new, Anna Bergen Knox, Robin Unzicker, Tony Vaccaro, Tony Olcott, my man Kevin Simmons, who was one of the first to support the podcast openly and in full. God bless you, Kevin. I love you. Karina Saint, who first turned me on to a lot of the Facebook fan groups. Christian Levesque, who signed me up with the True Caps Fans Gentlemen's Group and the main group. Brad Ricucci, many informative posts. Rick Fisher, Pete's cousin. Oh, and of course, Billy Lang. He of the Caps 365 Edits group, beautiful artwork, as always. I know I'm forgetting a lot of names that I should be mentioning, but they're just not coming into my mind right now, and I apologize. But those are just some of the folks that I have had the immense pleasure of meeting and connecting with over this year and a half. And if it's because we all saw a team, for the most part, try its hardest and fail for hockey's holy grail, no rhyme intended, then I think I'm all the better for it. Bless you all. And I just want to say that this podcast will continue. Like I say, I would love to be able to make some money with this thing. You can always donate at the Podbean page, blueliner77.podbean.com. There is a donate page. Or you can get with me via my personal email, glhallowed@yahoo.com. Mainly you can find my podcast at the site and on iTunes. I understand it's available in other mediums, but I haven't seen it. So whatever support you want to throw at the show, great. I'll accept it. send me an email, whatever you want to talk about, I'll talk about it. Hell, if you've got something in the way of a product or service that you're, you know, you kind of want to test the waters on, I'm willing to do it for free or perhaps a very small fee, very small affordable fee. I know my reach isn't that great, so, you know, but a donation would be nice. But, you know, if you can't come up with anything, that's fine. I'm willing to do that. Done that with my friend Michelle Scholand, with her line of products, as you might have heard a few episodes ago. But mainly the very last thing I want to end on, the note I want to end on, is that I know it looks very, very bad right now. Well, okay, I don't want to say bad, but the future of this team is at best uncertain. Uncertainty, as we have all come to know in life, can be a very scary and very bad thing. You don't know what's going to happen from one day to the next, but that's just how life is. And that's how hockey, among other sports, imitates life. That's how this team imitates life. And so sometimes you sit and you watch this kind of thing blow up in your face like it did, and you ask yourself, why bother? Why go out there and put yourself through this? And I said at the beginning of the episode, this thing hurt like hell. I had to turn away from it for a while, and it hurt that much. Every bad word, literally, that was said about this team literally had come true. They had turned themselves into everything bad that everyone had ever said to them. And we have to live with that. So you have to ask yourself, why put yourself through that all over again, year after year? And it's because we love this team. I mentioned several examples of, at least for this year, why we do love this team. And I think, among other things, the smile on Fatima Ali's face when she got to share the ice with the team, when she got to practice with the team, and when she was introduced before the game against the Red Wings before the end of the season. I think that was certainly worth it. That moment was worth it. The LGBT community being represented, willingly and faithfully by Braden Holtby, unflinchingly, was another moment of pride for this team, I think. Just little things like that that they do for the community, that and that's why we build up a sentimentality towards these players, even though it may well be that they may not be with the team that much longer. But they're part of a lore, they're part of a dialogue, they're part of a history, in that this team means something to the District of Columbia, and not just to the district, but to fans in Delaware, Maryland, and Virginia, up and down this whole region. It means something, and it's not just the regular season success, but they mean something in that the way they represent everything. And though the result may not have been what we wanted, what we most hoped and desired as fans, I think overall, when it comes to representing hockey, representing this community among the other member clubs of the NHL, I think they acquitted themselves very well. You can question a lot of things, but you can't question the overall integrity of this team, from the owner on down to the guy cleaning up the stalls in the locker room. And that's one thing I would say that you can hang your hat on, and that's one of the things that makes myself, and I'm sure a lot of you out there, if not everybody, proud of this team. And because of that, it's that pride in this team that, folks, I'm not going anywhere. And I know a lot of you aren't going anywhere. Rock the red till the day I'm dead. Even though the Rock the Red era may, for all intents and purposes, be dead. But I've lived through the Easter epic, not to brag. I've lived through Joey Juneau's missed penalty shot in overtime against the Penguins. I've lived through a couple of 3-1 series losses where we were up 3-1 and 2-1. But I've also lived through Dale Hunter's overtime goal in 1988. I've also lived through Joey Juneau's overtime goal in 1998 that got them into the final. I've lived through a lot of highs like that, and I think somewhere down the way, they will get to that summit. They will get to the mountaintop. And I will forever believe that until it happens, and I'm going to keep on believing that. So again, you're not going away. I'm not going away. We're staying. We're here. Whether it's in the Verizon Center or in our homes or in our cars, wherever we have the pleasure of listening to this team or witnessing what this team does, still going to cheer our hearts out. I expect nothing less from anyone listening to this if you're still willing to be a Caps fan. You got to go through some bad times to get to the good, and this is one of them. And I will remain confident that someday, you know, it seems a long ways off now, someday it'll happen. And you're willing to believe it's going to happen. So at the risk of running this much, much too long, I do apologize for that. But if you've managed to stay through all 90 plus minutes of this, thank you very much for listening. Thank you for believing. My future plans for the future episodes, I think, unfortunately, there won't be a whole lot of material, but what I'm thinking of doing is covering some Caps history, certain seasons. May not be every week, but certainly at least once a month, once every couple of weeks, maybe. Of course, we're going to be tuned in to what the general manager decides to do. So there will be that. There will be my assessment of that. I'd like to hear from all of you guys listening what your opinions are, of course, and stuff you want to hear about in the show. I mean, this is not just for me. It's for you. If there's something you want me to talk about, there's something you want me to cover, do please let me know. GLHALLOWD@yahoo.com is the email address. There's also the Podbean page, BLULINER77.podbean.com. There's my Twitter handle, BLULINER98 at Twitter. So contact me any of those three ways, anything you want me to discuss, anything you want me to bring up about the Capitals or hockey in general for that matter. Let me know. Because this show is just as much for you as it is for me. And so I think I've taken up enough of your time. And so once and again, let's go Caps.